The following shiur has been presented by Rav Yitzchak Grossman, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Suvos, Daf Pei Aleph. In our previous two lectures for Daf Mayin Tes and Pei, we discussed the husband who puts assets in his wife's name and the question of whether that entitles the wife to those assets, either because the documentation putting the assets in her name implies that those assets were purchased with her funds, with assets that belong to her, assets she inherited, or because the document itself conveys title of the assets to the wife, or because the document implies that the husband was giving her the assets or the funds used to purchase them as a gift. In this lecture, we discuss another contractual consideration that may give the woman right to her husband's assets, in this case, her husband's assets in general, all her husband's assets. This is the boilerplate language common in engagement contracts in Tznoim of the Yishlatun B'Nefseim Shava B'Shava. The documents say that they should rule, they should control their assets equally. Both the provenance and the meaning of this language is unclear. The language dates back at least 600 years or so. We find various formulations thereof in the Nachal Shiva, in his celebrated listings of contracts. So he has several versions of this language in various forms of Tznoim from Ashkenaz and Poland. Val yavrichu, val yalimu, they shall not hide, they shall not secret away assets. Lo ze mizuv, lo zu mizeh, not him from neither him from her, nor her from him. Shum havrachas mamon ba'olam, any kind of hiding away of assets, property. Rak yishlatu b'nechsein shava b'shava, they shall rule, they shall control their assets equally. Another version: umeata hazug hanal, this couple, the aforementioned couple, yinhagu yachad ba'ava v'chiba, they shall conduct themselves with love and affection. V'lo yavrichu, v'lo yalimu, v'lo yinalu, lo ze mizu, v'lo zu mizeh, shum habracha ba'olam. Again, rak yishlatu shneim shava b'nechsein, they shall together rule their property equally. Nachal Sheva points out there are different texts between Poland and Germany. Some, they used to have two sets of Tznoim generally. Some wrote this language in the Tznoim Rishonim. Some wrote the language in the Tznoim Achronim. Sounds like everyone pretty much wrote them in one of the two sets of Tznoim. Nachal Sheva himself says you should write them in the Tznoim Achronim. In any event, this was a fairly common text, common in the Tznoim back then and common in Tznoim for the several centuries afterward. What's not clear is what exactly this language means, whether it has any legal significance at all, and if so, what. This discussion begins primarily in the 19th century. Before the 19th century, we just have a couple of isolated discussions of the language, poskim who do seem to assume the language means something, although the discussion does not really begin in earnest until the 19th century. The first and most important discussion of the early poskim is in the Marik, in the 15th century. The Marik was talking about a case, a marriage that broke up, ugly, and the husband seized all the property, his property, her property. Marik says he absolutely cannot do that. Even his own property he can't seize. He can't just say, I'm taking my ball and going home, it's my property. Marik says no. When they brought in their property together, it was meant to be shared jointly by the couple. All of his property is meshubah to her, for her mizonos, her parnasa, for her support. And certainly, he says, that's meikra din, and certainly because in the language of the Tznoim we write, sheyishlo tushneim shaveh b'shaveh b'nechasim, it says explicitly that nobody is allowed to hide property, that they both have control over the property. Marik explains that even if someone writes a tzai which is mevatel din Torah, he can say, Al-Menashe ein lecha alai sherekses va'ona, we pass like Rabbi Yehuda, b'darvashu amaman t'no kayim, kolshkin v'kolshkin, he says, a fortiori, certainly, that this tzai is l'kayim ashekasim v'tara, this tzai that neither one should take away or hide assets is in support of din Torah, which is that the mechasim shall be b'cheska shneim, that both parties shall have access to them, that she should be supported, tazun v'tisparnes, from these assets, v'vaday t'no kayim, v'ein rashoy levat l'tznai klal. So the Marik assumes that this t'nai has some meaning. The meaning is that he can't run off with his assets. It's not simply flowery, meaningless language. It has some meaning, but it's far from clear, as the later poskim shall discuss, how far this goes, what exactly this means. It does mean something. It means he can't just take the property and run away with it, but it isn't really clear how much rights, how much this grants her, how much control does this grant the woman. We have the Ati Arazim in the 18th century. He's discussing an old minhag that they used to borrow a ring from someone to use for Kedushin. The chassan didn't always buy his own ring. He would borrow a ring, often from a woman, often from a married woman, and they often wouldn't ask her husband. So the question is, all a woman's property is under the control of her husband. She can't dispose of property without her husband's permission. So how can we just borrow a ring without asking her husband? Question grappled with by the Achronim. The Atzei Arazim's justification for the custom is, we write a nusach in the Shtar Tosefes Ksuva. This is not the Tznaim, this is the Shtar Tosefes Ksuva. Nevertheless, the language therein was similar to the language of the Tznaim in the Nachal Shiva. I could not find this language in the Shtar Tosefes Ksuva in the Nachal Shiva, but the Atzei Arazim reports that in his Shtar Tosefes Ksuva they would write, Umayata, Hirshise, Vishlatate, Al-Kol Nichzai, Hein Kesef, Ashava Kesef. He places her in control of all his property. So he says that maybe that's why we write this. We write this so that she should have some power over his assets, at least the power to make a loan of her ring without his permission. Maybe he says this language was established by Chacham Echad so that she should have a din of Nasas B'Nasanas, the din of a woman who has certain authority and control over the marital property. She has the right to make deals and to use the property to act on behalf of her husband. And at least to make a loan of the ring for the purpose of Kedushin, she has the right to do based on this language, which grants her the din of Nasas B'Nasanas B'Tocha Bayis. Kizulas Zos, if that's not what this language means, what does it mean? Lo Yadati Tam Nachan L'Ksiva Zu. What else do we mean by writing Hirshise B'Shlatate B'Nechasim? It must give her at least some rights. So again, both the Marik and the Atzei Arazim suggest that this type of language, either in the Tanayim or in the Shtar Tosefes Ksuva, means something, although it's not that clear how far it goes. Marik says it means he can't take the property and run off with it. Atzei Arazim says she can make a simple short-term loan of her ring for Kedushin, but it's far from clear that even according to them, that this type of language grants her any substantial real right to the property, any real ownership right, any partnership right in the property. So beginning in the 19th century, a number of the major poskim discussed this question. In the Beis Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Shmelkish, we have a fairly brief discussion. He says, Tzarech Iyon, the Minhag is that we write in the Tznaim, Yishlutu B'Nechzeyon, Shavu B'Shavu, K'Arach Kalara. He had the word Arach Kalara. Yimadin came B'Emes. Should we take these words at face value? Is that really what it means? Sheyishlutu B'Nechzeyon, Shavu B'Shavu. At the time, Holam Machin came B'Ferish. Maybe we should take the words at face value. Oh, maybe it's just boilerplate. It's just flowery prose. It doesn't really mean anything. Ein Kosvin Kein Rak L'Shurfer D'Shtara. It's just something we write, but it doesn't really have any legal significance. And he makes arguments back and forth. He says it wasn't written in the Tanaim Achronim, so maybe he was Malchal Tanai. But in principle, he's not sure, Tzarech Iyon, whether to take this language at face value or not. The most famous discussion of this point is by Rav Shlomo Kluger in his Tuv Tam V'Das. He was asked about someone who wanted to say, the Ikar Halacha is Medina D'Shas, Medina D'Shulchan Aruch. A woman is only allowed to give on her own authority a small amount of money to tzedakah. She's not allowed to give large amounts without her husband's expressed permission. You're not allowed to accept tzedakah from a woman of a large amount without making sure her husband agrees, because it's his money, not hers. She has no right to it. So Rav Shlomo Kluger's correspondent had suggested that Bizman HaZeh, she is allowed, this halacha is no longer enforced, Bizman HaZeh, she is allowed to give large sums of money without her husband's permission, because that's what it says in the Tznaim, Yishlutu B'Nechzeyam, Shava B'Shava, they shall control their assets equally. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, absolutely not. Tamua Ma'od L'Chadish Davar Kazeh. Rav Shlomo Kluger expresses a very conservative sentiment. How can you mechadish such a thing? B'zeh yizbatel kama dafen b'shas v'shulchan aruch, mavur behepach. Shas and shulchan aruch are very clear that the husband has the right to have the control over the money, not the woman. You're saying because of these four little words, yishlutu b'nechzeyam, shavu b'shavu, you're going to uproot many pages of shas and shulchan aruch? Doesn't seem like such a major kasha. In the time of the, certainly of the Shas, maybe even of the Shulchan Aruch, they're bringing the Ikra Din without the Shtar Tanayim. Shulchan Aruch was already written after the Shtar Tanayim was already popular, already, so maybe the Shulchan Aruch should have mentioned it. In any event, Rav Shlomo Kluger's conservatism makes him not want to say that these four little words can be oker many pages of Shas and Shulchan Aruch. So what do these words mean? So he has several pshatim. First suggestion is Shufra D'Shtara, like the Beis Yitzchak, it's just language without any real meaning. We always write it, we write it in all the Tanayim. Not a Tanai, he says, Rak Derech Bracha. It's good wishes, it's our optimistic hope for the couple, from the writer of the Shtar, from the Edim, they're giving them a Bracha, that there should be Shalom V'Achtus, until they should agree, to the extent that they should agree, to let each other control the property. We just hope that they get along so well, they don't have to litigate everything, they don't have to fight about money, that they trust each other and they allow each other to make decisions. It's not really a Tanai. And even if it is a Tanai, he says, it doesn't mean that she has real right to the property. Maybe the Tanai, he says, is only going on her property. that he should have control of her property, but it's not really giving her control over Nechtetzon Barzil, and I guess certainly not over his property. Or maybe he says that it means that Hu lo yaseh bilti atasa, he lo tasa bilti atasa. So it means each one has to sign off, but it doesn't mean that she has the right to make decisions on her own. Not sure what that means. Does that mean the husband can't make decisions on his own either? Does the Rav Shlomo Kluger really mean that he can make decisions without her, or only she can make decisions without him? But in any event, Rav Shlomo Kluger is emphatic that it does not mean that she has independent power to dispose of his assets. Avada not. Either it's shufar d'shtara, or it's going on nechse malug, or it just means that she should consult him and he should consult her. But the hefter of his correspondent, Chalila l'chadish kein. We can't be mechadish on our own. We can't uproot many pages of Shas and Shulchan Aruch and Chalila to invent such a hetzer based on these four words in the language of the Tanakh. Now, the truth is, many and most of the later writers don't seem to have acknowledged this, but Rav Shlomo Kluger's correspondent was not a Katli Kani Ba'agmo. The Rav Shlomo Kluger's correspondent was a very distinguished Rav in his own right, Rav Yechiel Michel Hibner, the author of the Mishnah Saroim, the Tshuvas Hadar, and many other Svarim. And in his Mishnah Saroim, he elaborates further on his discussion with Rav Shlomo Kluger. He writes, Bialdusi, when I was young, he says, I had this idea. Maybe today we can accept tzedakah from women because of the language of the Tanaim. So he says, I spoke to Admar, Hagon, Hamiti, Saba Kadisha, Rash Kabahag, Kvod Kedushas Tarasa, Rav Shlomo Kluger, of Brud, and he answered me quite unequivocally that he does not accept my chiddush. Says Rav Hibner, he didn't give up so quickly. He says, first of all, even according to Rav Shlomo Kluger, and he seems to accept Rav Shlomo Kluger's final approach, that it means each one should get the permission from the other one. So it doesn't mean that she has the right to unilaterally dispose of assets against his will. Fine. But it does mean that they're sort of shutfim, that each one has a say in the matter. So if it's a shutfis, he says, a shutf who acts on behalf of the shutfis, even if it turns out that we objectively don't consider what he did to have been a good idea, he says, but the evidence works. Brings a shach who says that, and ein lecha tovas ha-shutfis yosher mizeh. This is the best thing for the shutfis. Vakas of Amar zero l'tzedakah. Giving tzedakah is a great investment. So a shutf has the right to give tzedakah on behalf of the shutfis as long as the other shutf hasn't protested. Therefore, a woman who based on the language of the Tanaim, has the status of a shutf, has the right to give money to tzedakah on the assumption that this is good for their marriage. It's good for their joint financial fortunes to give money for tzedakah. And that's how we can justify the minhag to borrow the tabas from the woman, because even if she doesn't have independent rights to dispose of his money, she's like a shutf, and a shutf has the right to make such decisions, especially with regard to jewelry, which are for her personal use. Then he goes further and he says, "Be'emes achshav achshar dara." Today things are better than they used to be. The woman is a real partner. She's nosei be'emes ha'olam baila shava b'shava b'tzarasa latzar. When things are bad for him, she feels bad. When things are good for him, kashriyetiv lo alakim chaisen afshar beglala. Today he says women are called chashuvos. We find regarding Haseba, our women are called chashuvos. He says, so these are all svaras apparently to say that she's really a shutif. In the time of Chazal, she was not an equal partner, or at least not financially in the marriage, so only he had the right to make decisions. Today, the woman is an equal partner. Akshar dar, he calls this. Some people might say this is feminism. He says, akshar dar. Today, the idea that women are equal partners and have the right to make decisions as a shutif is what he calls akshar dara. Still, he says, the limitation of this model is that if the husband explicitly protests and says, don't give money to tzedakah, that he can't do. A shutif can act on behalf of the shutifis as long as the other shutif hasn't said, I don't accept that. So other shutif protests, then according to Rav Shlomo Kluger, we would have to agree that he can't give tzedakah. Raki says, im kol zeh, libi humbly lamar. I still disagree with Rav Shlomo Kluger, in spite of all the respect he has for him, Saba Kadisha, Agon Hamiti, Rashka Bahag. Im kol zeh, he says he disagrees, and he thinks the language of Yishal Tupin Hasem, Shava B'Shava, means literally each one can make unilateral decisions over the objections of the other party, af neged das chavero. And he adds a remarkable coda. He says, "Bedaiti, if I merit from Hashem to give dowries to my daughters, my dear daughters, benose heikaros, b'li neder," he says, "I will explicitly stipulate this idea that my daughters shall have the right to give tzedakah and gemilas chasadim even without their husband's knowledge or permission." And also, he says, "Whatever the husband gives for tzedakah from the dowry, I guess, or even from his own money, she should have a chelik in that. She should have a chelik in that gift." He says he really feels that, at least with regard to tzedakah, the woman should be an equal partner. She should have the right to make her own decisions. She should get schar from his tzedakah. And he emphatically feels he did not give in to Rav Shlomo Kluger. He feels that this language really should be interpreted pshuto k'mashmo at face value, that she has the right to make unilateral decisions with regard to the marital property. Marsham also discusses this question. Marsham brings Rosh Shlomo Kluger, who felt he brings the first point to Rosh Shlomo Kluger, that it's only shur for deshtara. Says to Marsham, well, that's not really true. I have a Marik. Marik already said that this clause had legal significance. Marik may not have been going quite so far, but Marik did certainly say that it wasn't shur for deshtara. He felt this was a binding tonight. It's better than Mashmashkas of Atara. So Marik clearly said it's a valid tonight. It's tonight gomer. If so, he says, Yesh makum gadol divrei HaShaul. Marik constitutes strong support for Rav Hibner, for his idea that this is a real tonight. And after he says, Bizman HaShas v'Shulchan Aruch lo nagu l'chtov kein. Maybe in the time of the Shas v'Shulchan Aruch, they didn't write this. Now, apparently, as we've noted, the language does seem to predate the Shulchan Aruch, at least in Ashkenazic countries. Maybe in the Shulchan Aruch, Sephardic countries, they didn't write this. Mashenkim Bizman is that we write such language, so she's a partner. She has equal rights. She's more than a partner. She can act against his will. L'maisa, l'halacha l'maisa, the Marsham is not, again, he's conservative, he's not really willing to go out on a limb and pass him this way. He says, v'af, she'en b'yadeinu l'chadish davar zeh, even though there's makum gadol divrei HaShaul, you can't really be mechadish this as a matter of din. So what he wants to do is just to support a different shita of the Maramins, that in certain cases a woman can give tzedakah, this can be a sort of sniff. But in Svara, this appeals to him, that this tanai grants the woman real power, but as a matter of halacha l'maisa, it's not clear how far he's willing to take it. Other achronim, again, are more circumspect, closer to the position of Rav Shlomo Kluger. We find in the Tshuvas of the Machzeh Avram, the brother of Rav Avram Steinberg, he brings Ahti Arazim. He says, good, Ahti Arazim just says she can lend out the ring. But to say that she can transfer property away from him, Lahavra, Nachlami, Baila, that you don't find. And he brings a Ryan from the Marik, he says. The Marik himself, who's the Makar, the Rosh Verishon of this idea that this Tanai has major legal significance, the Marik himself, in a different Tshuva, says that a woman is not allowed to give tzedakah for a large amount. So, according to the Marsham, that once you write this language, things have changed from the time of Chazal. How can the Marik still paskin that she can't give a large amount of a tzedakah if you wrote this language in the Tanaim? Again, maybe there were different places. Maybe in some places they did, some places they didn't. But the Machzeh Avram fields, you see from the Marik, that whatever the Marik meant by saying that the Tanaim is a binding Tanaim, it just means, al karchach, all it means is that he can't take the assets and run off with them. He has to preserve them, Yehenu Shav B'Shava, like Marik says, they have to be preserved for the sake of her Parnasa, of her Mizonos. It doesn't mean that she can be Mevazveh, that she can spend and fritter away and take away Lahafkiah, Yerushas Habal. The language does not mean to give her that level of rights. Similarly, in the Sefer Vayivarach David of Rav Harfanis, he makes the same point, basically. He says, Marik is Mashra Fakert. Marsham is bringing a Raya from the Marik. Marik is Mashra Fakert. Marik just said, it's Tanai L'chazik Mashakasim Atara. The Tanai is to support Din Torah, that the Nechasim should be around, that she should be able to have part Mizanos and Parnasa. It doesn't mean she's a real Shutuf, that she should have the right to spend them and to take them away from the husband. The Kavan is only L'chazik Chiyim Mizanos out. That's all it is, not more than that. The Chavala Meneimim, Rav Grubart of Toronto, he seems to be noted that this Tanai would be binding, like the Marsham, maybe even like Rav Hibner. He brings the Marik, he brings the Beis Yitzchak. He says there is basis for saying that the Tanai gives the woman the right to the property. His problem is, which is echoed by some contemporary poskim, nobody actually reads this Lashon. In his place, in his time, he says they can barely even read Hebrew, most of the Chassanim. They have no idea what it says in the Tanai. So to say that this Tanai actually grants the woman rights is not Mesaver, he says, because it's, even if in principle it should, nobody reads it, nobody knows about it. And the Vayivarach David too, he says in his time people could read Hebrew, but again, the Chassan doesn't typically read it. The Chassan just signs it. He doesn't know it says that language there. And then they get, in contemporary poskim, they get into a whole discussion of whether a shtar that's signed without reading it is binding, is not binding. Sometimes the poskim say there's a presumption that he read it, but if we know he didn't read it, apparently it's not binding. Sometimes they say by the mere act of signing a shtar and choosing not to read it, you're automatically accepting whatever it says in the shtar. Poskim and Mefalpel back and forth on this point. But in any event, these are the shitas that we have in the poskim. So in summary, we have, on one extreme, we have Rabbi Chiel Mechel Hibner, who felt that the shtar actually grants the woman equal rights to make decisions even against the objection, over the objections of her husband, at least for tzedakah, maybe even for other purposes. Meidach Gisa, we have the studim in Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Beis Yitzchak, that the shtar doesn't have any legal significance, it's just shufer deshtara, it's just a bracha, it's just our hope, and just a hope and a blessing that the couple should get along and allow each other to make decisions and control over the property. And then in the middle, we have the shittas of other poskim, like Shlomo Kluger and his other possibilities, and the Machzeh Avram, and the Marashama, perhaps, that this language means something by Baruch David. It is a legal tenai. It does give the woman some rights over the property, but not as far as disposing of the property against his will. It just means that he can't take away the property. He should leave it here in the joint marital, in the joint marital custody. Or perhaps it means she can lend the ring for the kedushin, a minor thing which doesn't really interfere with him. It's not mafkia his yerusha and his nachla, but it doesn't mean that she can actually dispose of the property against his will. Rav Hibner had another idea that even if she can't do it against his will, she can give money to tzedakah on the assumption that it's good for the marriage, zero tzedakah. In our last and final share of this topic, Be'ezras Hashem, we shall discuss one last group of arguments for a woman's right over the marital property, and that is from the perspective of the law, or the custom, or explicit language, not this language of Yishlub Nechzeim, but explicit language written into a prenuptial agreement that the assets or the division of assets shall be according to modern convention or law, whether such a tenai is permissible, whether you're allowed to write such a tenai, whether such a tenai is binding, and whether such a tenai is not written based on modern expectations, the woman has a right to the assets based on minhag or based on the law.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.